What's wrong, Ren?
Stimpy, I've been a fool. I should have brushed my teeth. But now my teeth, they are gone. And all I have left are stinky holes.
Welcome to the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, the podcast that does feel like going into all that David Copperfield crap if you want to know the truth. I'm your host, Taylor Cole, and I'm here with John Boo Diddley McCoy.
That's right, and just like Mario's arch nemesis, it's when you turn your back on me, that's when I get you.
Dan, the goat with the moat McCoy.
I'm the youngest of the three McCoy brothers, and therefore my brain is still the sharpest.
And Colonel Rob from Not Quite Normal, Illinois, McCoy.
Outstanding in my field here in corn country.
Hello to everybody, and thank you so much for joining us for today's special off-season episode. That's right, listeners, you heard correctly. All of our players have the same last name. That's because they are all from, dun-dun-dun, the same family. First time for that here on our show. We've got John McCoy of the Sophomore Lit podcast, who has brought his brothers slash Sophomore Lit stalwart Thanksgiving weekend guests for a special episode focusing on the place where pop culture meets the books we read in school, with maybe a few more flophousey trivia surprises thrown in for good measure. But before we get to our players, we have to introduce our score master. It's Dan Cassino. How's it going, Dan?
Hi there, Taylor. It's great when we have these specials. We get to have some of our favorite podcasters on the show. And of course, I really love John Cho's Sophomore Lit because as someone who went to high school through the Arizona public school system, it's great to know that other people were actually reading books when they were in 10th grade.
Thank you, Dan. And also here working the boards, as per usual, it's production master Dave. Hey there, Dave.
Well, if it isn't the leader of the Wiener Patrol boning up on his nerd lessons. Egghead likes his bookie work.
Well, I think that's the sign it's time to get into our first game of the day. It's a round of My Champion. This is the game where each one of our three players has chosen a champion from somewhere out in the world of pop culture. But the catch is we pick the battle those champions are going to be fighting. From the aforementioned Sophomore Lit podcast over on the Incomparable Network, John McCoy, who is your champion today?
Well, like most kids who grew up in the 70s, I watched Mystery every Thursday night, and so my champion is Horace Rumpel of Rumpel of the Bailey.
You may have heard him on the Flophouse podcast. It is Dan McCoy. Dan, who have you got for your champion?
Appropriately enough to John and his mystery pick, I have chosen Sherlock Holmes.
And rounding out the brother trio here, we also have Rob McCoy. Rob, who is your champion?
It's a British threesome. I have Mr. Toad of Toad Hall, of Wind of the Willows and the Disneyland, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
All right, all three champions are locked in. Scoremaster Dan is on judging duties today. So I guess it's time to spin the scenario wheel. Today's scenario asks, which champion is going to be the best audiobook narrator? John, why is Horace Rumpel going to be the best audiobook narrator?
Well, I don't think it's really even any contest. If you've ever seen an episode of Rumpel of the Bailey, it's entirely done in voiceover already. Rumpel could not only read the story aloud, but he'd also interject wry observations on the British legal system. And he could quote from the Oxford Book of Light Verse, probably something by, I don't know, Wordsworth or Coleridge. And, you know, in the end, even if he does a bad job of it, he'll just go back to the Pomeroy's bar and drink a glass of claret and have a moral victory.
Thank you, John. All right, Dan, make the case for why Sherlock Holmes is going to be the best audiobook narrator.
I feel too connected to the character of Sherlock Holmes to make an argument that I feel would be a lie, because I think that he, in fact, would be a wonderful narrator in the sense that he speaks the Queen's English very concisely and sharply, but I would imagine that he would turn himself into knots thinking about all the inconsistencies illogical notions that would be found in the narrative, but he could provide, you know, some nice violin intro and outro music.
Thank you, Dan. And Rob, make the case for Toad of Toad Hall for being the best audiobook narrator.
I'm sure Horace has the best voice and Sherlock has a keen mind, but neither would show up. Toad is an early adopter of new technology like the phonograph and the audio recording, and he would be the only one with the enthusiasm to actually show for the job if he wasn't in jail. But assuming he wasn't in jail, he would do a great job, an enthusiastic job.
Thank you, Rob. All right, three strong arguments, but ultimately it is up to Scoremaster Dan to make our decision. Dan, who's it going to be?
Oh, boy. So once you start bringing up mystery or masterpiece mystery, boy, that makes it tough for me to voice for anyone else. The problem is, so yeah, Horace Rumpel would definitely be quoting from the Oxford Book of English Verse. Look, Leo McKern definitely has an amazing voice to do that sort of voiceover, but I'm concerned that he is going to wind up interjecting things into it and talking about, oh, she who must be obeyed or whoever. And I'm worried that's going to work against you, right? I don't want that in the middle of my audiobook. If I'm reading Nero Wolfe, I don't want suddenly to say, well, this would never happen in England. Let me tell you what Bill Bailey. Like, nobody needs that in their audiobook. I think Audible would fire him in a minute. So now we're on to Sherlock Holmes, right? Again, wonderful narrator. We all want those British voices in there. Again, I'm worried that he's going to point out inconsistencies. He's just going to say, this book is ridiculous, and throw it down and say, this is sort of nonsense that Watson would read. So the question is Mr. Toad, who has no expertise in this, but comes with enthusiasm, would that overwhelm it? And I would say Mr. Toad, of course, also does have a British accent. And as a good American, I think anyone with a British accent sounds just amazing. So if you've got enthusiasm and a British accent, I think you're the winner. So our winner is Rob and Mr. Toad.
Congratulations, Rob. You have won my champion, which means you get to take a crack at the half point. Answer this question correctly, and you will have half a point more than either of your brothers before we even start round one. Here is your half-point question. What Star Trek The Next Generation actor has recorded 63 books on Audible, including his own Just a Geek, as well as a whole bunch of John Scalzi's books?
Picard has the great voice, Stewart, but I think that sounds more like something Jonathan Frakes would do.
In this case, the author of the memoir Just a Geek is Will Wheaton, who has done a bunch of audiobooks. Answer here, Will Wheaton. Now, you may have missed the half point, Rob, but you still get to go first in round one. They canceled gym class for this. It's probably been a while since you've been to a Scholastic book fair, but they're still going on and still very much the way you remember them. But can you identify what the kids of today are picking up from the temporary shelves in the gym? In this game, we'll describe a book or series of books currently offered at the Scholastic Book Fair that happens to have a related TV or movie version. You name that property. For example, if we told you that a series of books based on this sci-fi franchise reimagines many of the characters as middle schoolers trying to pass chemistry and lift boulders with the Force, you'd know that was a version of
Star Wars.
Star Wars, yes, specifically the Jedi Academy series. That answer would get you 10 points. If you need more help, we can tell you about a movie or TV version of the same property, but then a correct answer is only worth 5. First question is for Rob. This series of R.L. Stine books, which has led to multiple TV series and movies, has been in print since 1992 and can still be found at the book fair.
I've not read a single one of these, but I think it's Goosebumps.
Correct for the full 10. Next to John. The 2020 prequel to this popular book series looks at the rebellion in Pan Am and got the whole series back onto Scholastic shelves.
Oh my God, I have no idea. Could you tell me more?
Jennifer Lawrence starred in the well-received movies.
Okay, sorry. So this is like a millennial thing, so I no way I know it. It's the Hunger Games.
Still good for 5. Next up, over to Dan. This long-running series of action movies had a 2019 animated spin-off on Netflix, and that spin-off has books based on it.
A long-running series of action movies. is it a hint, I guess?
A 2023 installment in this franchise is adding Jason Momoa.
Adding Jason Momoa. Well, that does very little for me, but I'm going to guess that this is just because of the dates, let's say the Spider-Man Spider-Verse thing.
Jason Momoa joining the cast of the next Fast and Furious movie, the animated Fast and Furious series, is on the Scholastic bookshelves, yes.
What?
I've heard it's not bad, actually. I know.
How has Netflix not tried to sell this to me? That's like, why has this been one of the things I have to dismiss on the main screen, saying no, thank you,
Dan? Because it is for small children. It's called, I think, Fast and Furious Spy Racers.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We are back to Rob. This series of graphic novels, which started in 2015, follows a group of anthropomorphic criminals trying to do good deeds. Shenanigans ensue.
Well, most of us are anthropomorphic, but I'm going to need a hint.
A 2022 animated movie version of this series features the voices of Sam Rockwell and Mark Maron.
Are there any steals in this game? Can we steal?
If he gets it wrong, you can steal for glory, but not for points.
I will pass and let my youngest steal because I do not know.
I believe this is the Bad Guys.
Correct for no points, but that is The Bad Guys. Next question is to John. A prequel novel to this Netflix series that's popular with kids, despite not actually being for them, follows Max, who gets abandoned by her family in Indiana.
Oh, Max, those Stranger Things.
Correct for the full 10. Over to Dan. A series of books designed to introduce kids to this game cover topics like warriors and weapons or monsters and creatures.
Dungeons and Dragons?
Good for another 10. Back over to Rob. Most of the kids' novels based on this popular open-world video game are unofficial, but recently Mojang has been hiring well-known writers to put out official books.
Oh... Are these the Legends of Zelda books?
These are books based on the world of Minecraft, created by Mojang Studios. Next up, over to John. Books based on this popular Disney Channel original movie series feature new adventures of high schoolers whose parents come from across Disney movies.
Well, yes, this is another millennial touchstone that I know about because my kids watched. It is the High School Musical series. No!
You're in the right vein of Disney Channel original movies, but this series is the Descendants series about the children of Disney villains. But still, thinking about what your kids like is probably going to help you a little bit in this game. Next, we are over to Dan. This series of novels with a notoriously downer ending was big in the 90s, but the graphic novel versions are currently popular, even if they don't have the cool transformation effects on the covers.
Downer endings. Series of novels with notorious transformation effects. I'm gonna guess, is this Animorphs?
It is. The Animorph series having a bit of a graphic novel resurgence.
What's the downer ending? What happened to the Animorphs?
It's like the 50th or 60th book. I made it all the way to the end of Animorphs, and just so much death, so much sad depression and cosmic nonsense is a real bummer.
They got put down.
That's why they're extinct now.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't one of them get stuck as an animal?
That was very near the beginning, and then he regained his morphing power in book 13, but we don't have to get into the details around that. All right, time for our first score update from Scoremaster Dan.
You know, I was a little worried. We were asking our current players about things that are being sold at Scholastic Book Fairs in the year 2022, but my gosh, everyone's doing very well. Right now, Rob has 10 points, John's ahead of him with 15, and Dan is currently the lead. He's got 20 points.
All right, next Scholastic Book Fair question is for Rob. A movie brought this series of YA novels about an adolescent crime lord back onto Scholastic shelves, even if the movie was not exactly well received.
Adolescent crime lord. I am going to need a hint again.
That 2020 movie featured Colin Farrell, Judi Dench, and Josh Gad, among others.
This is I don't spend my time watching as much movies as Dan. I don't know. I'm going to pass.
This movie is the straight-to-Disney Plus Kenneth Branagh-directed version of Artemis Fowl, the Artemis Fowl series.
Covered by the Flophouse.
There you go.
That's why
there
I was smirking go. Over here.
I did listen to the episode. I just didn't recall the recap.
Next one is for John. This 1978 mystery novel about the residents of an apartment building finding out they're all potential heirs to a fortune is still a favorite of kids.
Well, this is Dan's favorite book, The Westing Game.
Woo! Still being sold. Full 10 points for John. Next up, back to Dan. This is probably the only book series at the Scholastic Fair written by a folklorist. We're guessing kids mostly like the creepy drawings by Stephen Gammell.
Oh, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yes, inspiring that 2019 movie. Back to Rob for the last Scholastic Book Fair question for each player. While the original run of books in this series ran from 1986 to 2000, these days the book fair is selling the very popular graphic novel versions, starting with Christie's Great Idea.
Christie's Great Idea. Have no idea, great or otherwise. Need a hint.
There was a 1990 TV series and a 1995 movie, but the kids probably like the 2020 Netflix version that ran two seasons and had Alicia Silverstone in a supporting role.
No idea. Pass.
Is the Babysitter's Club?
Yes, the Babysitter's Club.
My wife Audrey likes that Netflix series.
I know so many adults who love the Netflix version.
It's very comforting.
Back to John. This series of novels that started in 2005 has been seen as a way to introduce kids to Greek myth, but has since expanded to multiple pantheons.
Oh my God. Yeah, I know. Percy Jackson.
Percy Jackson and the Olympians. Very good.
And the Olympians.
And the last one is for Dan. While the author of this book is beloved among kids, this particular novel is back on the shelves because of a movie version and a graphic novel release that's hopefully a little less graphic than the multiple child murders described in the book.
Oh, okay. This is the author of this book. Do I have a hint still?
Yes.
I'll take one just to be safe.
The 2020 movie version starred Octavia Spencer and Anne Hathaway.
The Witches.
Yes, that Robert Zemeckis movie, The Witches. Well, that'll do it for round one. Up next, the scores from Scoremaster Dan and on to round two.
Going to round two, it's time for the Equals score break. Equals. I think I like this movie better when it was called Equilibrium and had kick-ass sword fights. Right now, John is in the lead with 35, but Dan is tied with him with 35 points as well. Rob is trailing with 10 points, but that means he'll get to go first in round two.
And Rob also gets a chance to make up some ground with the Threequalizer. Rob, I'm going to ask you a question that has three possible answers. You're going to have three guesses to match as many of those answers as you can, with 10 points to you for each answer you can match. Here is your Threequalizer question. Disney has a tendency to take the books and stories that they adapt in unexpected directions. Between 1937 and 1945, Disney made three feature-length animated movies based on existing published books, rather than fairy tales or original stories. Name those movies.
Well, there was The Legend of Sleepy Hollow and Mr. Toad that was joined sort of in one movie. I'll say The Adventures of Ichabod Crane. It wasn't really a children's book, but it had a lot of stories in it. How about Ferdinand the Bull? No? Only one Disney movie that comes to mind that from that period, around that period, is Make Mine Music, which I don't think is the answer, but I'll guess it because I don't have anything else.
Three solid guesses, all of which from a little bit later than 1945. Those earlier movies we're looking for were Pinocchio from 1940, Bambi from 1942, and a 1943 propaganda movie based on the book Victory Through Air Power. So those were the three we're looking there: Pinocchio, Bambi, and Victory Through Air Power. Ferdinand the Bull, an animated short. We were looking for feature-length animated movies in this question. But that'll take us right into round two, entitled Follow-Up Let Down. Great works of literature rarely need a follow-up, but the authors and publishers might need the money that they can provide, so follow-ups we get. In this game, we'll tell you about some odd sequels to well-loved literary classics, some written by the author of the original, some not. So for instance, if we told you that in the sequel to this Roald Dahl book, the main characters take an elevator from the factory into orbit and dock at a space hotel where they have to deal with shape-shifting monsters, you'd know that was the sequel to...
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yes, the sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory called Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator. That would get you 20 points. If you need more help, I could tell you about how we might have to recast if we made a movie or TV version of that sequel, but then a correct answer is worth just 10. Afterwards, you can get another quick 10 points by answering a follow-up question about one of the adaptations of the original. To make things a little easier, all the books in this game are ones that might well be assigned to school kids. Let's kick it off with Rob. A kind of sequel to this classic teen drama, actually written by a teenager, is also set in Tulsa and has appearances from many of the central characters of the original. What is that original book?
Gosh, Tulsa. I don't know any stories in Tulsa, so I'm going to need a hint.
They made a movie of the sequel, but they didn't recast C. Thomas Howell.
I'm going to have to pass.
The Outsiders?
Yes, S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders. With that pseudo-sequel, That Was Then, This Is Now. Still for Rob, in the 1983 movie of The Outsiders, Two-Bit Matthews was played by Emilio Estevez. In the 1990 TV series of The Outsiders, he was played by this Scream actor.
This is really playing to my strengths. I have no idea.
You're going to dominate the law round, though, Robert.
David Arquette stepping into the role of Two-Bit for the TV version of The Outsiders. Next up to Dan. In the first sequel to this 18th century classic, the title character goes back to the island and then gets stranded on Madagascar.
Goes back to the island. Oh, is this Robinson Crusoe?
Correct. Dan, a 1964 sci-fi take on Robinson Crusoe had Adam West, and the lead stranded with a monkey here.
I know that the movie, I believe, is called Robinson Crusoe in Space. Is he stranded on Mars?
It is Mars. The title is, in fact, Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Oh, on Mars, okay.
But no one Mars gets you the points. Next weirdo sequel is for John. One of the authorized sequels to this American classic has the female lead get briefly shipwrecked and goes back to Ireland, where she rebuilds her old family estate. Because that worked out great last time.
Oh, wait a second. Is this The Fall of the House of Usher?
Rob knows this one.
I believe this is a sequel to Gone with the Wind, which I think was Scarlet.
Yes, from 1991, Scarlet. Still for John, the burning of Atlantis scene in the original Gone with the Wind was filmed by burning old movie sets, including those from this 1933 Fay Wray movie.
Oh, that would be King Kong.
Yes, destroying those King Kong sets. We are back over to Rob. In the sequel to this children's classic, the animals from the first book have settled in an isolated valley, but the gene-edited son of the title character from the first book winds up coming into conflict with humans again.
I'm going to take a stab at Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of NIMH.
For the 20. Rob, the acronym NIMH in the title you just mentioned stands for this.
National Institutes of Mental Health.
Rob's on a comeback, full 30 points there. Next over to Dan. A much later sequel to a classic war novel, written by the original author, follows the original characters as old men in New York, and in what's supposed to be satire, gives one of them radioactive urine. There are hints available.
Yeah, I'll take one.
Assuming we were working with the original movie and not the recent TV series, we could have Alan Arkin reprise his role from the original.
Yeah, this is what I thought, but I wasn't sure. Catch 22.
Yes, with that 1994 sequel called Closing Time. Dan, the 2019 TV version of Catch 22 was produced and had some episodes directed by this actor, who also played Shyskov.
Was this George Clooney?
It was, doing that series for Hulu. Next up to John. There are multiple sequels to this 19th century historical epic following the daughter of the main character from the original. In one, she has to deal with a driven police inspector who is not dead, despite drowning in the original.
Sequels to 19th century driven police inspector. So, can I have a hint?
You could probably get Amanda Seyfried to come back for a sequel if they filmed one.
Amanda Seyfried? I only know her from Veronica Mars. I have no idea.
Amanda Seyfried, star of the movie version of Les Miserables. This is one of the sequels entitled Cosette to Les Miserables.
You haven't seen Mean Girls, John? Mean Girls.
Mama Mia?
You haven't watched Mean Girls.
Still for John, a 2018 British miniseries version of Les Mis had this The Wire actor in the lead role of Jean Valjean.
Oh my God. You know, I think I am the only person in North America who has not watched The Wire, so I will have to pass on this as well.
That's McNulty from The Wire, Dominic West playing Valjean there. We are back to Rob. The sequel to this gothic romance has the main couple come back to Manderley, where the shadow of a previous occupant hangs over them. So, you know, more of the same.
This would be Rebecca.
Still for Rob, an Emmy-winning 1997 version of Rebecca had Charles Dance as Mr. De Winter and this star of The Avengers as Mrs. Danvers.
The Avengers. I'm thinking probably the British TV show, not the recent ones. Diane Riggs?
Oh, very close. Diana Rigg. Rigg singular. Yeah. So most of it there, but not quite. We are back to Dan. In the first of many sequels to this classic of 80s sci-fi, has the character of the original writing a book about the aliens exterminated in the original, igniting a spiritual movement.
Ender's Game?
Yes, the first Ender's Game sequel, Speaker for the Dead. Dan, in Ender's Game, the alien Formix resemble this Earth creature.
You know what? I like cats, so I'm going to say cats.
Rob knows this one.
Ants.
Ants, the Formix.
It's right in the title.
Oh, yeah.
The name, Latin.
All right, well, you know, when the Latin round comes around, you're going to...
Next up to John. The bonkers sequel to a much-adapted children's novel has the Lord of Sirius give animals superpowers and offer to take them to the stars so they can avoid nuclear war.
I know this one. This is 101 Dalmatians.
That's amazing. Dan Casino wrote this question, and I fully was like, no one's ever going to get this, but that is incredible stuff. That title to the sequel being called The Starlight Barking. Still for John, in the original Disney version of 101 Dalmatians, the dog barks are performed by Clarence Nash, best known as the voice of this often indecipherable character.
Oh, that's Donald Duck.
For another 10 points, which will take us into our next update on our scores from Scoremaster Dan.
Everyone's doing pretty well in this round. Right now, Rob has 60 points, John is a little bit ahead of that with 75, and Dan has taken the lead. He now has 105 points.
Whoa. See if Dan can hold on to that lead. Our next question is for Rob. The sequel to this 1998 children's novel follows a minor character from the original named Armpit after his release from a work camp. He goes to Austin and falls in with a violent ticket scalping ring.
This is just a stab in the dark again. Is this holes?
And all I have left are stinky holes.
Correct. The spin-off sequel to Holes. Rob, aside from Holes, the former gym teacher Louis Sachar, the author of Holes, is known for this series of absurdist grade school books.
Captain Underpants.
In this case, we're talking about the Wayside School series, also by Holes author Louis Sachar. Next to Dan. The modern sequel to this children's classic mostly follows Lottie, but the rest of the girls at Miss Minchin's feature as well.
Lottie. Oh, who could forget Lottie? Wonderful Lottie. Can I get a hint?
Liesl Matthews, who played the lead in the Alfonso Cuarón adaptation, retired from acting, but Cuarón could certainly make something of the sequel.
Oh, is this, is this A Little Princess?
It is A Little Princess, with that sequel called Wishing for Tomorrow from 2009. Dan, one very early version of A Little Princess was a silent film released in 1917, starring this woman, known as America's Sweetheart, and the girl with the curls.
Shirley Temple?
Mary Pickford, another star from that era. Next to John. In a sequel to this classic war novel, the main character tries to cope with his wartime experiences and winds up as mayor of a post-Civil War town in upstate New York.
So a Civil War novel. The Red Badge of Courage. What?
Very good.
What?
Yes. A 2021 sequel to The Red Badge of Courage entitled Henry.
What?
Not to be confused with Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. That's just totally different thing.
Yeah, it's completely different. Still, for John, the Audie Murphy version of The Red Badge of Courage was a rare flop for this Treasure of the Sierra Madre and African Queen director.
John Huston.
Good for another 10. Last misbegotten literary sequel for each player. This one is for Rob. The sequel to this much-loved Austrian novel has the twin children of the couple from the original facing many of the same perils as their father, and get bailed out by the title character from the original, who is now a prince.
Okay, well, Austrian. I was going to go with Heidi, but that's not a prince unless there was some sort of change between the novels. And William Tell is Swiss, so I'm at a loss. Is there a hint?
Disney is apparently working on a new version of the original, so they could probably use some of that cast for the sequel.
I don't know. Pass.
One of the few animated movies Disney has not yet remade, this is Bambi.
Oh.
Some weird stuff in the sequel to Bambi entitled Bambi's Children from 1939.
And before we get any letters, Bambi was an answer in the last game, not this game. That we do repeat. We love that.
It was in the threequalizer. We were putting it in Rob's brain for it to come back later. Still for Rob, in Disney's direct-to-video sequel to Bambi, the Great Prince of the Forest is voiced by this actor who also played Poop in the Emoji Movie.
Gosh, can't believe I don't know who was Poop.
Come on. If you lived in New York, there were big pictures of the Poop emoji with the name of the actor beneath it.
Oh, gosh. Gilbert Gottfried.
No, this is Sir Patrick Stewart.
Okay.
Yes, also popping up in the Disney sequel to Bambi. Next up, back to Dan. A collection of short stories serves as the sequel to this animal-oriented 1972 novel. They detail some rodent mythology and follow up with life in the Warren after the events of the first book.
Is this Watership Down?
Yes, with that anthology called Tales from Watership Down. Dan, the 1978 version of Watership Down was the last feature film work of this, the producer's star, before his death.
Zero Mostel?
The final role for Zero Mostel. And our last one is for John. The sequel to this Pulitzer Prize-winning memoir follows Frank McCourt from his impoverished immigrant childhood through to his success as a teacher and raconteur.
Well, I live in Boston, so they'd shoot me if I didn't know this was Angela's Ashes.
Yes, with his follow-up entitled Tiz. John Alan Parker, who directed the movie version of Angela's Ashes, is best known for directing music videos for Madonna and this 1996 musical.
Evita?
Taking that movie version of Evita, 10 more points to John closes out round two. Up next, the scores from Dan and on to our final round. Before we get to our final round of play, it's time for the home version. Correctly guess the answer to Dan's riddle by the time our next episode comes out, and you can win fabulous prizes, like the chance to name a score break here on the show. Take it away, Dan.
There once was a friendly TV face, whose kindness and warmth filled up space. He explored his roots, a kid's show he produced, a game show dream his fans did embrace.
Think you know the answer to that? Then head to usaquizshow.com/riddle to send in that answer and win that prize. We'll post the correct answer next week on our social media. We are at USA Quiz Show on both Instagram and Twitter. Thanks for the riddle, Dan. How about an update on our scores?
Going to round three, it's time for the Fiona Volpe score break. Fiona Volpe. Is that in a double entendre in Italian or something? Am I missing it? I'm so confused. Right now, Dan is in the lead with 145 points. John is on his heels with 135. Rob is trailing with 80. That means he'll get to go first in round three, and we'll need to get 7 correct answers in order to pull into first.
And anything can still happen as we get into the lightning round. Players have their choice of categories and are given 90 seconds to answer as many questions in that category as possible. 10 points for each correct answer you can provide. Today's categories are the unbearable weight of massive talent, fraternities, the land of Lincoln, and X marks the comics. Now, these topic names are a little bit mysterious from their names alone, so pick the thing you think you're going to be able to do the best on, or perhaps you want to keep something away from one of your fellow contestants. Rob, in third place, you get first crack at a lightning round category. Which of the four would you like? Once again, they are the unbearable weight of massive talent, fraternities, the land of Lincoln, and X marks the comics.
I'm sure it's a trap, but I'll have to represent the state of Illinois and go with the land of Lincoln.
Do you have a guess as to what the content of this round is going to be, Rob?
Old cars.
Your reasoning for the choice is actually a little more spot on than your guess. This is going to be all about movies filmed in the state of Illinois. 90 seconds on the clock. Rob, are you ready?
As ever. Yes.
In Rookie of the Year, a preteen becomes a starting pitcher for this oft-beleaguered team.
Chicago Cubs.
This young gun plays the titular best friend in My Best Friend's Wedding.
Pass.
This Oscar-winning Paul Newman film hinges on a horse betting con.
The Sting.
In a 1992 horror movie, you summon the Candyman by saying his name this many times.
3 times.
5. The poor box office of 1991's Dutch was parodied on this concurrent Fox sitcom.
Pass.
She plays the computer-generated Lisa in Weird Science.
Oh, gosh. I can picture her, but I'm... Pass.
Jake Gyllenhaal has 8 minutes to stop a terrorist attack in this 2011 thriller.
Source code?
In Chain Reaction, this little Buddha star is framed for an explosion at a cold fusion facility.
Is this, Neo? No. pass.
James Caan is a safecracker doing one last job in this 1981 Michael Mann film. Thief is that title. That's James Caan. Thief. All right, Dan, let's hear the Rob report.
All right, let's go through the passes first. The young gun, who is the titular best friend of my best friend's wedding, is Dermot Mulroney. At least I'm pretty sure. It could also be the other one who looks just like him, but I think we're just going to go with Dermot Mulroney here. I must have looked it up at some point. The poor box office of 1991's Dutch was parodied on the Ed O'Neill sitcom of the time, that is Married with Children. Kelly LeBrock plays the computer-generated Lisa in Weird Science, and indeed it is Neo. Keanu Reeves, the star of Little Buddha, the movie, of course, we all know him for, starred in Chain Reaction. He discovered how to do cold fusion in that movie through sound, right? That's it, stabilized the water by having sound waves in it, because he was just like a janitor or something there, but then he gets framed. It's not a good movie. Anyway, Rob needed 7 correct answers to pull in the lead. Unfortunately, he got only 3, so Rob's going to finish up with 110. John is up next. He has 135 points. If he gets 1 question correct, he's going to tie Dan for the lead. If he gets 2, he'll pull in the lead all by himself.
All right, close game up at the top. John, 3 category choices left for you. They are The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, Fraternities, and X Marks the Comics.
Well, you know, I do like comics, but the fact that it's X Marks the Comics makes me think this is going to be about X-Men. So I think I will instead do the first one, The Unbearable Lightness.
Of being?
Oy. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
The Unbearable Weight. The Unbearable Weight. The Unbearable. Yes, right. Sorry. I'll do that one because I don't know anything about X-Men.
Where do you think this category is going, John?
Well, I don't think it's about The Unbearable Lightness of Being. The Unbearable Weight. Is this about relative gravities of planets?
Yep. You nailed it.
You got it.
For a science quiz show now.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is a 2022 movie starring Nicolas Cage as a version of himself. So this is going to be all about Nick Cage movies of the 2010s. Oh, so recent Nick Cage movies. 90 seconds on the clock. John, are you ready?
Not really, but go ahead.
Spirit of Vengeance is the 2012 sequel to this 2007 superhero flick.
Oh, 2007 superhero flick. Ghost Rider.
In Into the Spider-Verse, Cage's black and white character is stymied by this Hungarian puzzle.
Oh, Rubik's Cube.
USS Indianapolis, Men of Courage covers the same story as a monologue in this 1975 classic.
Oh, Jaws.
If Cage is Big Daddy, then this, the peripheral actress, is Hit Girl.
Daddy, Hit Girl. Oh, I know the movie, but pass. I don't know the actors.
Cage plays magician Balthazar Blake in this 2010 Disney movie.
Oh my God. Pass.
In Drive Angry, Cage drives a Dodge Charger out of this place of punishment.
Oh, hell.
2014's Dying of the Light was directed by this writer of Taxi Driver and Cat People.
Oh my God. The writer of Taxi Driver. I don't know. Pass.
Inconceivable reteams Cage and this Bound actress 20 years after Face Off.
Oh, Jennifer Tilly.
Gina Gershon. Cage voiced Superman in a 2018 movie version of this superhero kids show.
Oh, Justice League of America?
Teen Titans Go. In Army of One, Cage is tasked with killing Bin Laden by God, played by this Arthur Starr.
Arthur Starr. Oh,
please say Dudley Moore.
All I can think is Dudley Moore.
It's the Arthur remake with Russell Brand playing God in that movie. All right, Dan, let's hear the John report.
So let's go through the passes first. If Cage is Big Daddy, then Chloe Grace Moretz is playing Hit Girl. Cage plays magician Balthazar Blake in the Disney movie The Sorcerer's Apprentice. And the writer of Taxi Driver and Cat People was Paul Schrader. So John needed just 2 correct answers to move the lead. He had 4. So John now has 175 points and has taken the lead. Dan is up next. He'll need to get 3 correct answers in order to tie and 4 in order to take the win.
All right, two category choices left. Dan, pressure is on. They are fraternities and X Marks the Comics.
Yes. Well, unlike John, I immediately clocked Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent as a probable Nick Cage category and thus probably thrown in there as bait for me. So I will take the thing that I assume was bait for him, which is X Marks the Comics.
Where do you think this is going, Dan?
I don't know, but I don't necessarily think it's entirely X-Men related. Maybe it is. Who knows?
It is about as far from X-Men as you can be in the comics realm. If you're spelling comics with an X, then you're probably talking about alt and underground comics. So this is all about alternative and underground comics and their creators. 90 seconds on the clock. Dan, are you ready?
Sure.
Comics artist Gary Panter won 2 Daytime Emmys for his work designing the sets of this Paul Reubens TV show.
Pee-wee's Playhouse.
This comic by Los Bros Hernandez has been published by Fantagraphics since 1982.
Love and Rockets.
In the 90s, Peter Baga drew The Adventures of Batboy for this supermarket tabloid.
Weekly World News.
100 Demons and What It Is are among this cartoonist's autobiographical works.
Pass.
Issues 11 to 18 of 8-Ball were adapted in this 2001 Thora Birch movie.
Ghost World.
Before Mouse, Art Spiegelman co-created this line of gross trading cards for Topps.
Garbage Pail Kids.
The Boeing Machine is a collaboration between Mark Byer and this From Hell writer.
Alan Moore.
Julie Doucet's early work was published by this Montreal-based company.
Pass.
In 2009, this cartoonist courted controversy with a comic version of the Book of Genesis.
Robert Crumb.
Cartoonist Jim Woodring worked on the 1983 cartoon featuring this star of the A-Team.
Mr. T?
In the film American Splendor, Paul Giamatti has the lead role as this cartoonist.
What's his name? American Splendor. Pass.
And there is the buzzer. All right, Dan, let's hear the other Dan report and our final scores.
Dan did remarkably well at the alt comics category. I thought this was going to be a really tough one. Let's go through the passes first.
Well, I was raised by John.
100 Demons and What It Is are among the autobiographical works of Linda Barry. In alt comics, the most famous Montreal-based publishing company is Drawn and Quarterly.
Of course.
In American Splendor, Paul Giamatti plays Harvey Picar. So Dan needed just 4 correct answers in order to take the win. He had 8. So our final scores are Rob with 110, John with 175, and our winner with 225 points, it's Dan.
Dan, congratulations.
Hey, Dan.
It's
a fun of
it's a... This is only a marker of how wasted my life has been.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm glad it has paid off for something. Congratulations, Dan, on defeating your brothers on this very, very fun episode. Thanks to all 3 of you for coming and joining us today. This was very, very fun. But before we go, I want to give you a chance to plug some things. John, is there anything you would like to point our listeners towards before we leave?
Well, certainly my podcast, Sophomore Lit, which is a little more serious than this, but... Not much.
Thank you, John. And Dan, anything you'd like to point our listeners towards?
My podcast, the Flophouse Podcast, which is about bad movies. I host it with my friend Stuart, who is a funny man, and my friend Elliot, who is a professional funny man, being someone I met at The Daily Show as a writer. And it's comedy talk about bad movies. You can find it at flophousepodcast.com.
Thank you, Dan. And all of these links to all these different podcasts will be in your show notes. So check that out, listeners. Well, that is going to wrap it up for this week. Be sure to join us next time for the start of our 9th season with a whole new crop of contestants ready to duke it out and fight to become our next champion. I've been your host, Taylor Cole, and on behalf of Scoremaster Dan, Production Master Dave, and all 3 brothers McCoy, thank you for listening to the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. All right, all 3 champions are locked in. Scoremaster Dan is on judging duties today. So I think it's time to spin the scenario wheel.
Give me one more reading of that, please.
Sure. So I think it's time to spin the scenario wheel.
Oh, that's the other one. I think you said Judging Judy's, I think.
Oh, geez, Judging Judy's. Excuse me.